of the NDC's Legal Affairs Directorate. And let's bring you News 9 right now. The headlines, Gemma is standing by. Gemma.
Well, tonight's government says no to stripping the Attorney General of anti-graft powers, but yes to separating the AG's office from the Justice Ministry.
The Attorney General will remain the principal legal advisor of the Republic and the repository of the prosecutorial authority of state, but will cease to be a minister of state and a member of cabinet.
And that's just one of many constitutional reforms government is backing, including a 5-year term for president and MPs, dual citizens in public office, a cap on parliament, and big changes to the judiciary.
The government has accepted that the size of parliament be capped, and we propose a ceiling of 300 members. Now, the current membership of parliament is 276.
We bring you more details on government's position on key constitutional reforms. Also, he was an inventor, entrepreneur, and founder of Christo Asafo. Today, Apostle Kwajo Safo Kantanka was laid to rest in Goma Mpota amid claims of an injunction.
It shall lead Africa to think beyond dependence and to embrace self-reliance through knowledge.
Despite his many accomplishments, he preferred to shine the light on others, celebrating their success and supporting their dreams.
In business.
Bulk oil distribution companies switch to spot price in the development, which could lead to fewer prices being reviewed at the pumps every day.
Later in sports.
UEFA threatens to boycott all FIFA-organized competitions until proposals to sell stake in World Cup are shelved.
And on your say?
At what age would you send your child abroad to study if you had a means? We tell you why Speaker Alban Gbagbin says some children sent abroad may not even return for their parents' funeral. As always, you can be a part of the conversation and share your thoughts on all our stories on X with the hashtag News9 or by text and voice notes via WhatsApp line 055-1111-997. Do keep them brief, straight to the point and within 20 seconds.
Stay with us for details of these and more. But before then, Ken.
Yes, indeed. And as I mentioned earlier, we have Abraham Amaleba on the line. He's a former director of legal affairs of the governing NDC. Former Deputy Attorney General Alfred Tuayebua is also joining the conversation. Gentlemen, welcome once again. Mr. Amaleba, now we are hearing that the Attorney General, Dominic Aini, is filing a stay of execution. Many are saying it's a bit too late. Do you think it's a little too late for him to do that now?
How is that too late? Because this judgment just came this morning, and if the Attorney General feels dissatisfied with the ruling of the Court of Appeal, he has asked that this should be done immediately. And so how is that too late? It's not too late, because what we are hearing did not occur 5 years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. What we are hearing occurred this morning. And he has rightfully asked the DPP to file an appeal. And that is what the law is about. If you are dissatisfied, you apply for an appeal. So what the Attorney General seeks to do is to say that I'm dissatisfied, and so I want to appeal against the ruling of the Court of Appeal. And possibly that could also be overturned at the Supreme Court. So let's allow the justice system to run its full course.
Are you hopeful that that's going to work?
I am not God. I didn't even know this particular outcome. So how will I know the Supreme Court one? If the lower court one, I didn't know, how will I know the Supreme Court one? I'm not in that position to engage in guesses.
Don't go yet. Alfred Tuayebua is also with me. He's a former Deputy Attorney General. Mr. Tuayebua, welcome to the program. You were part of the extradition processes that brought Sedina Tamaklu to Ghana to face the law. Are you surprised? Do you ever foresee that we were going to get to a point where she would win an appeal, which eventually sees her coming out of prison anytime soon? Mr. Tuayebua, do I have you? Kindly unmute your microphone so we can hear you.
Yes. So with respect to whether I anticipated that she was going to be set free, I knew that she had a right to appeal, but I never had in mind that the Court of Appeal was going to set her free on the grounds that I've seen in the judgment that they delivered today. And so I'm surprised.
Well, the Court of Appeal said that it identified evidential shortcomings and legal defects. Looking back, do you believe prosecutors should have conducted the trial differently?
Not at all. Let me also commend the hard-working attorneys at the Office of Attorney General, the hard-working investigators at Yoko, who took time to go through this matter and also help in the prosecution of this matter. The evidence on record, I can say without any equivocation, is so solid that the decision of the Court of Appeal to set her free on the grounds that the evidential burden was not met is rather strange and also very surprising. I've gone through the record because I was part of the prosecution along the line. If you look at the extent of the evidence, for instance, regarding the 500,000 Ghana cedis that Maslock advanced to a microfinance company in the Ashanti region, when the company received the check, ADB check, the company asked about the conditions attached to the loan. They realized that they could not meet the conditions, so they requested that they were going to write a check and send the money back or the check back to Maslock. The board chair of that institution was then called by Madam Tamaklu, and Tamaklu insisted that the money should be in cash. So they withdrew the money in cash, 500,000 in 2014, came to Accra, that part of the evidence, came to Accra at a filling station at Pachuna, gave her the raw cash, and then she gave them a note acknowledging receipt of that money. If this is not evidence that a court of appeal should accept, then what else do you expect a court of law to accept? Secondly, there was a fire outbreak at Kantamanto. The president, then President Mahama, then in his wisdom, decided that the trader should be cushioned. An amount was voted for that purpose, over 1.4 million Ghana cedis. The audit that was done showed that less than 800,000 Ghana cedis was used. The remaining amount will not be accounted for, but, and then so she was tagged with that offense. There was also an instance where an amount of close to 1.8 million Ghana cedis was voted for sensitization of macro customers nationwide. Over 80,000 of them were to go to the 10 regions. Evidence on record shows that Madam Sedna Tomaklu went to only 3 regions. And guess what? Out of this 1.8 million, spent only 1,300 Ghana cedis. The remaining amount, she kept it. There's also evidence on record to show that there was an amount of 246,000 Ghana cedis which was voted for financial literacy. That amount was not used for that purpose. Not even one peso was used, but the money never went back to Maslock. That there is no evidence on record, then I beg to differ. Then it will only mean that if you want to get evidence to prosecute, you must bring Jesus Christ or Muhammad for the person to be testified. Aside from this, the evidence on record, I can also say without any equivocation that the reasoning by the Court of Appeal that a charge sheet was or is defective is also not something that we should also assess. Why am I saying so? Granted, the charge sheet was even defective, which I deny. If the Court of Appeal had adverted its mind to specifically Section 31, subsection 2, the Court of Appeal have come to a conclusion that Tamaklu should be acquitted and discharged because the charge sheet was or is effective. But avoidance of doubt, I just want to read that section, section 31, 2. That the appellate court shall dismiss the appeal if it considers that a substantial miscarriage of justice has not actually occurred, or that the point raised in the appeal consists of a technicality or procedural error or a defect in the charge, my emphasis, or indictment, but that there is evidence to support the offense alleged in the statement of offense in the charge or indictment or any other offense of which that this person could have been convicted on that charge or indictment. This means that even if you fire the court that the charge sheet that was used was or is defective, you don't go ahead to say that that person should be discharged. If there is evidence on record, which in this case, mountain of evidence on record, and so on what basis the Court of Appeal did they hold that the foundation document was defective, so not anything that was built on it can also not stand. I mean, that's a misapprehension or misunderstanding of the relevant provisions in the Court Act. If also take the Criminal Offences, a Criminal Procedure Act, Section 406, Section 1, you have the same provision there. And so the Court of Appeal, with all due respect, erred big time, never adverted it much to the laws that we have in our statute books, and decided to acquit and discharge Tamaklo without any basis.
Mr. Tweba, don't go yet. Ibrahim Amaleba is still with me. He's a former Director of Legal Affairs Directorate at the NDC. Mr. Amaleba, do you agree with the assertion by the former Deputy AG that the court erred in this?
I don't need to agree with him or disagree with him. What is important is that the Attorney General has appealed. I hope that the grounds of appeal would include what he's saying, if they are meritorious. I don't need to agree or disagree with him. Just like how the attorney's lawyer also saw a defect and exploited it to her advantage, so also can the Attorney General also see the defect. And then that's the beauty of the law. That's why you have one person, High Court, three people, and five people or nine people. So we knew as a people that there will be challenges such as this, and that's why the appellate system was put in place. So I think that once the Attorney General has appealed, some of these things will find their way in there, and then we'll hear what the Supreme Court will say.
The opposition MPP has released a lengthy response to this decision by the Court of Appeals, and part of it says that this is a major blow to Ghana's fight against corruption and evidence of what the party describes as a politicized justice system. What do you make of that assertion by the opposition party?
Well, as for political parties, they would definitely have a bite on this. The propaganda would continue, but I like the way the Deputy Attorney General is dissecting the issues. We see that he is staying on the law and not playing to the gallery, talking about the fact that it is going to be against the fight against corruption. It's going to be against the fight against corruption. What is important is that every person, and you see, the Constitution doesn't say every Ghanaian, every person. So even a Nigerian, a Sudanese, can go to court and vindicate his rights. So once Atieno took advantage of that, and the three judges agreed with him, so also can the Attorney General go to the Court of Appeal, a Supreme Court, and have the Supreme Court agree with him too. So I don't think that we should pay attention to the MPP's propaganda. Today, what is his name? Wuntumi is filing an appeal. So if the Court of Appeal agrees with Wuntumi's position, will that also be politics? They should give us a break.
Ibrahim Amaleba, thank you very much. He is the former Director of Legal Affairs with the governing NDC. I still have Alfred Tuayeboah with me. He's a former Deputy Attorney General. Mr. Tuayeboah, the Attorney General says they are not going to rest on their laurels. Already, they have filed a stay of execution at the Supreme Court. What do you make of that decision that has been taken by the AG? Proactive?
The decision to appeal is something that I expected to be done, but we also be looking at how committed the Attorney General will be to that process, to ensuring that the Court of Appeal judgment is set aside. Because if that judgment is not set aside, I've indicated somewhere that the kind of situation that is going to create is such that our fight against corruption is going to be a mirage. Is a test case that all of us will be watching. And to the judiciary, I think they're also part of the fight against corruption. And if this particular judgment is what the judiciary is giving to us as its share of the fight against corruption, then I'm afraid we may not go or get to where we want to go. And so the Attorney General, if honestly, from his heart, deep down his heart, thinks that he's going to pursue this appeal, we will watch him to see what goes into it.
Mr. Alfred Tiayabua, thank you very much for your time this evening. Adam Senan, who is also joined the conversation, is an anti-corruption campaigner. Mr. Senan, welcome to their program. Already, there are concerns from a cross-section of the public that this will derail and thwart our efforts in fighting corruption in this country. Is that something you agree with?
Well, yes, to the extent that we don't have the full ruling, there's no clarity on how we arrived at this point. It does not send the right signal. I think that just in the same way as the Supreme Court chose to have its ruling provided, because the issue was very sensitive, that's the same kind of approach we should have used so that it does not begin to suggest that something untoward has happened. I think the AG has taken the right action to say, even to the Supreme Court, to stay execution. We will see what happens in the days and weeks to come.
That's interesting. Are you concerned that this outcome could discourage public confidence in future high-profile cases of corruption nature like this one?
Well, knowing Ghana, it will not lessen our interest, but our confidence in what the kind of outcomes will be is something that will be dented, because there's really no clarity. Question would be, are there monies that have been lost? Is there money that should be retrieved? Does this serve the greater interest of all of us? At the moment, I'm not quite sure that it does. So the AG following up on this would be very critical to how we interpret it for the future.
Right. And if the prosecutors fail to establish the offences beyond reasonable doubt, as the Court of Appeal is saying after years of investigation, what do you think that say about the quality of corruption investigations in this country?
Well, you know, we have said that it is much better we have a specialised anti-corruption court. And everybody in that value chain actually ought to be trained. I've said that in Kenya, they have a specialized anti-corruption. In fact, they have 13 of them, 12 or 13 of them. And the cases are handled within 6 months. It's a deadline. They sit every day. And everybody is trained to understand the context and the nature such that everything is facilitated. So it might just be that we need to do much more capacity building or awareness creation, or much better still, have specialized court systems for this, so that those who are judging, those who are investigating, who are prosecuting, have a stronger grasp of the issues and can deal with them in a way that facilitates getting conclusions to the matter.
Adam Senanu, thank you very much for your time this evening. He is an anti-corruption campaigner. And earlier, we heard from Alfred Tuayabua, who is a former deputy attorney general. He held with the extradition of Sedina Tamakolo from the U.S. to Ghana. We also heard from Abraham Amaleba, who is a former director of legal affairs at the governing NDC. Let's bring you more stories this evening, Gemma.
Well, before we bring you more stories, the NPP MPs have also been speaking to Joy News in Parliament. They have dismissed the AG's announcement of an appeal as mere sentence and a public relations gimmick, questioning whether the government is genuinely committed to mounting a strong appeal before the Supreme Court.
Do you believe the Attorney General when he says so? It's just making those pronouncements to kind of appease or send a signal to Ghanaians that he doesn't agree with the court. But you and I know that there is no way he's going to be committed to a strong appeal process that would lead to a possible conviction of one of their own. As I said, they are not committed when it comes to the fight against corruption.
Legally, we are told that the AG says he's going to appeal. Well, I have no faith in that appeal because I know that they are not going to put any serious fight. It's just political gimmickry, if you ask me. I think that they want the people of Ghana to know that they're doing something about it. Mark my words, the woman is going to walk free. She's not going to suffer any punishment for what she did. It tells us one thing, that in this country, our fight against corruption is just on the face value. We don't mean it, especially this government.
We monitored the sentiment of Ghanaians upon the ruling of the Court of Appeal. Then I see this as an afterthought in the backlash and the pressure that they are attempting to even appeal against the decision of the Court of Appeal.
He's doing that because this was not received well, particularly by some of the people from our stock who had joined them, from the middle class and the CSOs. You see, what the NDC is doing is very calculated, and nobody seems to be paying attention. I'm going to tell you this. This whole thing is a sequence. They planned the date for the judgment such that it will meet the issuance of the white paper on the constitutional review. Deliberately accept the cut, the reduction of the age for the president to 39, so they think that the youth will celebrate 35, so that the youth will celebrate.
So you heard MPs, minority MPs in Parliament. Away from that, government has rejected calls to take away the Attorney General's power to prosecute corruption cases, but it has accepted the proposal to separate the office of the Attorney General from the office of the Minister for Justice. The decision is part of government's official response to the Constitution Review Committee, chaired by Professor H. Kwesi Prempeh. The committee wanted the AG's corruption prosecution powers moved to a new Independent Anti-Corruption and Ethics Commission, and for that body to merge with the Office of the Special Prosecutor. It also wanted court approval before any prosecution is discontinued by the AG and Minister for Justice disagrees. Presenting government's position paper, Dr. Dominic Ayine explained why government is rejecting it.
The committee recommended the establishment of an independent anti-corruption and ethics commission with the power to investigate and prosecute corruption, and to assume the functions of the Office of the Special Prosecutor. The government accepts the proposal in principle, but the objective does not require a constitutional amendment. The government will, through the Conduct of Public Officers Bill, which is currently before Parliament, establish a Public Ethics Commission with the power to investigate and, in some cases, prosecute acts of corruption and conflict of interest involving public office holders and their collaborators in the private sector. Its mandate would be similar to that of the Corrupt Practices Investigation Bureau of Singapore, but unlike that bureau, it will be independent of executive control. Ladies and gentlemen, this briefing would be incomplete without me telling you about the changes affecting my own ministry. It is not every day that a minister stands before the press to announce the splitting of his own ministry. The committee recommended removing the Attorney General's authority to prosecute corruption offenses and recommended requiring leave of the court before a prosecution will be discontinued. So, in
Well, Dr. Dominic Ayine said government accepted the proposal to extend the tenure of the President and Members of Parliament from 4 years to 5 years to provide administrations with adequate time to govern effectively. The recommendation does not apply to the current President and MPs.
The government has accepted a recommendation to extend the term of office of the President from 4 years to 5 years, with the term of Parliament extended to correspond with this. Our thinking is practical. Under the current four-year cycle, the early months of every administration are consumed by transition matters, and the final year is largely consumed by elections. A five-year term provides a more realistic time frame for the formulation, implementation, and assessment of government policy. Still on the presidency, the committee recommended that the minimum age of eligibility for election as president be reduced from 40 years currently in the constitution to 30 years. The government has accepted this recommendation in principle, subject to one modification. The minimum age will be 35 years, not 30 years. And of course, the details of this will be fashioned out by the Constitutional Review Implementation Committee. The current threshold of 40 years excludes qualified citizens from seeking the highest office on the basis of an arbitrary age limit. 35 is consistent with the trend in modern democratic constitutions towards greater inclusivity of the youth, whilst ensuring that a candidate for the highest office has attained a measure of maturity and experience to handle that office.
The government also accepted the committee's recommendation to allow Ghanaians with dual citizenship to hold public office, with exception of the offices of president and vice president.
The government has also accepted a recommendation on dual citizenship. A citizen of Ghana by birth who holds the citizenship of another country will no longer be barred from contesting for election to parliament only on account of his or her dual citizenship and will not be required to renounce the other citizenship. The current disqualification sits uneasily with our engagement with the diaspora and with the realities of modern citizenship. In line with this proposal, it is also the case that multiple citizenship will no longer disqualify a person from holding certain offices, except that of a president and vice president of the republic. So the fact that you have multiple citizenship will not bar you from becoming chief justice of the republic or becoming the head of the electoral commission or, for instance, becoming speaker of parliament.
Presidential Affairs correspondent Maxwell Agbagba joins us live from the presidency. Maxwell, what are the other key highlights of the government's position on the recommendations by the Constitution Review Committee?
Well, Gemma, quite a number of them. The government has accepted a proposal to hold presidential elections in the first week of November. We know we used to the December 7th date, but the government has accepted a proposal to hold presidential elections in the first week of November, saying that a fixed election period will provide certainty for the electoral calendar and allow adequate time before the inauguration of a new president on January 7th. Now, the government has also accepted the principle that the president should not enjoy tax exemptions by virtue of his office alone and will pay tax on salary, allowances, and applicable indirect taxes. Now, we know that the issue of Article 71 holders ex gratia has dominated a lot of conversations. Now, the committee, the government has accepted the establishment of an independent public emoluments commission to determine the salaries, allowances, facilities, and privileges of public officers, including the president and other Article 71 office holders. Now, it says the move will replace the current system under which a committee appointed by the president determines the emoluments of office holders.
The government has accepted that the size of parliament be capped, and we propose a ceiling of 300 members. Now, the current membership of parliament is 276. So of these, the 276 will be elected directly in constituency elections like we already have. The remaining 24 will be elected or selected through proportional representation among women, persons with disabilities, and the youth. An independent study will be commissioned into the design of the proportional representation element. Capping parliament saves costs, and the reserved element opens the door of our legislature wider to those our politics has historically kept on the outside.
So we can also hear from the Attorney General on what's next for this particular recommendations that they have accepted.
Now, the roadmap is set out in this position paper for amendments of the constitution set out in this position paper, and it is deliberate and time bound. Following today's publication, the president will swear in the Constitution Review Implementation Committee. CRIC will prepare two constitution amendment bills simultaneously. The first bill will cover the amendments to the non-entrenched provisions of the constitution. It will follow the procedure in Article 291 of the Constitution, that is publication in the Gazette, laying in Parliament, a referral to the Council of State for advice, and passage by two-thirds majority of all members of Parliament, followed by presidential assent. The second bill will cover the amendments to the entrenched provision. That bill must travel the road prescribed by Article 290 of the Constitution.
That's the Attorney General, Dominic Ayini, there. You're still listening to Newsnight here on Joy 99.7 FM. Remember, you can be a part of this show by sending us a WhatsApp on 055-11-11-997. Share your thoughts with us from all the stories we've been sharing with you so far. You can also send us a voice note. Let it be a maximum of 30 seconds. We will share your thoughts with the rest of the world. It's time for business, and George is here. George, what's coming up?
Well, Kenneth, coming up, bulk oil distribution companies switched to spot pricing, a development that could lead to fuel prices being reviewed at the pumps every day instead of the current 2 weeks banned. And Ghana's trade surplus for last year increases by threefold to hit 148 billion Ghana cedis as total value of export reaches $32 billion, with gold again being the major driver. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. Kingdom Books and Stationery, your
Sasso Kumtonton Preco Nani Shamne dear and Demostronko.
This advert is FDA approved.
Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, bulk oil distribution companies in the country have switched to spot pricing for the various petroleum products. This could result in prices being changed as and when there's any review on the international market. Now, based on these changes, we could be moving away from prices being reviewed by the oil marketing companies every 2 weeks to every day. Chief Executive of the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors, Dr. Kweku Ofori, says the current global market development has forced them to go this way.
That unstable climate that we find ourselves in, most of these IOTCs have returned to LCs and cash advance payment before they close some of the transactions, because they also want to be protected against the exposure, judging from the experiences that they had with the Russia-Ukraine. I think the lessons from that has also created a situation whereby people are putting in place measures to also reduce their exposure to risk. So that is also a key factor going into the next market and the next pricing window. So you could clearly see that most of the marketing companies will be triggering prices on a day, on a spot basis, to also avoid a situation whereby they take a position and then before they could even get the products to their stations, the prices have either gone up so high or has gone down so low that they will have to take the hit on that. So I think it's trying to shake up, and it will be a reflective of the market dynamics.
Dr. Kweku Ofori, Chief Executive of the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors. Now, the holding company for Zen Petroleum has posted a profit before tax of more than 137 million Ghana cedis ending June this year. This was captured in the group's financials that was released after it listed on the Ghana Stock Exchange. Financial statements showed some strong growth in most areas of its operations for the first 6 months of this year. Now, the country ended last year exporting far more than what it imported. The Ghana Fiscal Service annual merchandise trade statistics showed that Ghana realized 148 billion Ghana cedis, more than what it imported. In dollar terms, it was worth 11.5 billion. There is more in the following Business Desk report.
The annual international merchandise trade statistics report showed that in 2025, Ghana got 654 billion cedis with respect to total earnings from exports. In dollar terms, that was worth 32 billion cedis. Gold alone brought in about 254 billion cedis, representing more than 60% of the total earnings for last year. Asia remained Ghana's largest trading region when it comes to imports and exports. China emerged as the country where Ghana sourced most of its imports for the year 2025. Diesel and petrol imports alone exceeded 51 billion cedis. On the African continent, the increase in exports was driven by a significant spike in cocoa products, cashew nuts and tuna, while food imports declined slightly.
And that was a Business Desk report. Meanwhile, government statistician Dr. Alhassan Idrisu says the numbers are quite encouraging despite recent challenges that hit the economy.
Ghana exported to 51 African countries and imported from 55 countries across the continent. South Africa remained Ghana's largest export destination within Africa, while Nigeria was a leading source of imports, especially petroleum products. Trade with Greece also remained strong. Ghana exported significantly more to Burkina Faso, Togo, and Cote d'Ivoire than it imported from them. Exports to Burkina Faso alone exceeded 11.8 billion Ghana cedis, driven mainly by plastics, iron, and steel products, as well as manufactured goods. The report further highlights positive developments in food trade. Food exports increased by more than 33 billion cedis in 2025, driven largely by cocoa products, cashew nuts, tuna, and shea products.
And that is government statistician Dr. Alhassan Idrisu. Now, accounting and financial services firm PwC Ghana is warned that the current economic stability that the country is enjoying could be tested in the coming months. It is particularly worried about inflation, which could go beyond 10% by the end of this year. We have more in this report.
According to PwC Ghana, inflation is likely to rise in the coming month and could breach the government's upper target band of 10% by December. This could mean that the single-digit inflation target may elude Ghana this year. The auditing and accounting firm argued that its concerns have been influenced by current development in the Middle East, the possibility of fuel price increases in the coming weeks, and the potential impact on transport fares. Furthermore, the firm was of the view that the government might be forced to increase spending in the second half of the year, particularly on capital expenditure and job creation, which could affect its fiscal position. On Ghana's debt situation, the accounting and auditing firm added that although the debt-to-GDP ratio has declined, the nominal debt stock has increased significantly, and that should be a concern for everyone. On revenue, PricewaterhouseCoopers expressed concern about the government's ability to meet its end-of-year revenue target, arguing that development in the Middle East could negatively affect revenue collections.
And that is a business tech report. And Kenneth, tonight on the PM Express Business Edition, it's still about the mid-year budget review.
Right.
And we are trying to concentrate on the revenue concerns, whether we'll end the year raising more revenue than what we've gotten. For half year, we're down by 1.5 billion Ghana cedis. And I'll be engaging the technical advisor to the finance minister, that is Dr. Tue Champon. He will be our guest in studio, and also tax partner at PwC Ghana, Abeku and Kwanzaa. And in the business's corner, Mike Biduabuaji, Chief Executive of the Ghana National Chamber of Commerce and Industry. These are three distinguished persons will be my guests tonight in studio as we look at the mid-year budget review and the revenue concerns.
Thank you very much, George, for business. Before we get to your say very shortly, let's go to the Volta region now, because the countdown is on for the Volta region edition of Joe News' Democracy is Not for Sale campaign. The forum takes place tomorrow, Friday at 4 p.m. in Ho, bringing together citizens, political actors, and key institutions to examine the impact of votes buying and campaign financing on Ghana's democracy. Ahead of the event, the Joy News research team has been on the ground in Ho, engaging residents and gathering data on public perceptions of money in politics. Maxwell Akloboto is a member of the research team on ground who have been engaging voters in Ho since Monday ahead of the forum. Max, what have you gathered so far since your team landed in Ho?
Interestingly, we've actually interacted with over 200 persons across various sectors in the city. We've visited market women, traders. We've visited hospitals to speak with health workers. We've also spoken to tertiary institutions, the students. We've visited the UHAS and then the whole technical university, just to actually get the perception of these individuals when it comes to vote buying and democracy as well.
Just yesterday, the Supreme Court abolished the delegate system of internal elections within political parties. Do your findings suggest what this could mean for votes buying within political parties?
In fact, yesterday when we were interacting with some of these individuals trying to collect data when it comes to their perception about vote buying and then democracy, in fact, they were like, if this is going to be the decision, then it means it's going to actually cost more when it comes to elections internally among the political parties. If they want to actually give them something as an incentive to induce their votes, it means induce them to vote for them, it means it's going to cost them more. So they are saying maybe this decision by the judicial, the Supreme Court is going to actually help get this situation of people actually trying to give them items and money in order to induce them to vote for them.
Now, the event is tomorrow. What are we supposed to expect from you?
Gemma, it's going to be an interactive session with the people of Ho. We've invited a couple of them, including chiefs, traditional leaders, and other groups who are coming to share their views and also give us what we should also give to our leaders when it comes to those in charge of democracy in the state. So we are going to hear from the people. It's going to be people-centered. We hear from them and we give them what we have also gathered. We are going to give them, project our data that we have collected so that we see the overview when it comes to their perception about democracy as a state. Yeah.
Maxwell Aklobotu, thank you very much. Democracy is Not for Sale Regional Citizens and Politicians Forum is brought to you by the Joy News Impact Makers Foundation. Make a date with us on Friday, 31st July, and join the conversation live from home. Now, let's do other stories. Praise poured in for the late Apostle Suffolk Kantanka's legacy of innovation and creating jobs for Ghanaian youth. Even though a court injunction was in place and the Christo Asafo Mission told members to stay away, many still turned up to pay their last respects. Here are excerpts from the tributes delivered in honor of Apostle Kojo Suffolk Kantanka.
It was a remarkable fusion of spirituality, innovation, leadership, and service. He built churches, industries, schools, research, and centers, and institutions. He inspired millions to believe in their own potential. He challenged Africa to think beyond dependence and to embrace self-reliance through knowledge, technology, and hard work.
Well, from tributes, let's do sports now. Benaya is here. Benaya, what's happening in sports?
So Infantino is under fire because your man wants to sell about 21% of FIFA World Cup, the shares, to private investors, and UEFA are saying over their dead bodies, it's not going to happen. So they are saying that they believe the venture is a way of Infantino trying to remain lucrative in the job while overseeing FIFA, so that in case he even vacates his presidency in 2031 FIFA, he will still have at least, let's say, something to still
hold on to.
Yeah, so they are not going to allow it to happen. And also it's kind of like poisonous to football, because imagine you have private investors buying shares to the FIFA World Cup. You have the richest man in Ghana who has about a lot of money to invest in it, and other countries also investing. They want to have a say in what happens on the field.
Right.
Because if I'm representing Ghana and somebody's representing, you want the best for his country. So a similar thing happened at the World Cup where an American player was suspended.
And yes, Trump intervened.
Yeah, exactly. So they don't want those kind of stuff to happen. But before that, Infantino has been speaking, trying to explain the importance of this idea.
FIFA for Enterprise, or FFE, is actually a proposal, an offer. It's part of a democratic process, a consultation process. And above all, it is an opportunity, but not an obligation.
Yeah. So the profits that's expected to be made from this to FIFA is about 4.something billion US dollars. And if you're a Ghanaian, you'd want to accept or say yes to it, because out of the 211 associations, he just needs more than half of the votes.
Okay.
So those threatening to boycott it are like France, England, and Germany. If they don't even vote, the other countries will say yes, because they'll need the money. So if Ghana is earning, gets $8 million from FIFA, and FIFA says if you say yes, you're going to get like triple the amount, wouldn't you say yes? You say yes.
Well,
so that's the issue at hand right now.
He's the best friend of Donald Trump. They say best of a feather flock together, yeah, don't they?
Yeah, so that's what's happening in sports right now.
Thank you so much, Benaya. It's now time for our favorite segment. Ejem is here, and today has been a very busy news day. From the court to the presidency.
Then you can go to Beaumont and Porta.
I know, right?
Yes. And then you can also... Okay, so I'll take you to the last one.
Okay.
Where you can go to the US. But anyway, people are reacting. And almost all reactions are in response to the said in acquittal. This one, and it's most of them are late, but I'll try and cut them short. This one says, Ghana is such a sad country. Just one sitting and she's already discharged. The court deals only with the poor. Now, this one from Sam Bannerman says, it's very strange how technical errors in judgment will free Sedina Tamaklu, who couldn't account for huge physical taxpayers' money. This one from Kwesi Nkaswa says, I don't think that Madam Sedina should be freed. What evidence again do they need? This from Francis Nakra says, that why is the MPP and his agent saying if they are not happy with the appellate court, saying they are not happy with the appellate court acquitting and discharging Sedina, they should bring Ken to also come and get charged and sentenced, and later he also goes to the appellate court for acquittal. That's an interesting one. Now, Prophet Wisdom Agbozome says MPP is not surprised of the ruling by the High Court. We know from day one that this woman will be acquitted. Nana Ikuyamua Boateng in Abudikuma Central says the promises this incompetent government made whilst in opposition and its actions in office are glaringly contradictory. The much touted promise reset now appears to be nothing more than a mirage. This one from Angelo Fiagbe says the whole Court of Appeals seems highly political from the angle of the bench. And the final one from Baba Chairman in Tamale says, so what exactly is going on in this country to the extent that there is a flagrant display of partiality by some judges? And some very interesting comments in there. So yes, before I leave,
right,
Sedina was brought into the country from US, but there's a trend where politicians are taking their kids to the US for schooling,
right?
Babin has a very special message for them. Let's listen to Abba Babin.
I'm one of you who rush your children abroad to study. I beg you, you don't love your children because you know you are going to lose them. It's when they study here and get to a stage of maturity and they want to advance and they're going to do masters, PhD, and that kind of thing, then you have hope that they will come back. Those you carry as babies and send there, they don't even come to your funeral. They don't know you. They don't have any attachment. They don't like your country. There's no patriotism there. They don't know what is a family. Because over there, there's nothing like that.
So what exactly is his point?
His point is that if you want to take your child out of Ghana, you have to wait. Let them.
Oh, please.
Let them, when they are...
When they finish first degree.
Then you can go and do master's.
Adam, you see, you listen to politicians at your own peril. They say one thing and behind closed doors, they are doing another thing.
Well, okay, if you want your children to be at your funeral, like...
Oh, please.
Happening in Beaumont, in Porta.
Oh, please.
Let them be in Ghana and then take them so that you will know that... In